Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Parhiskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of a grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
Iran strongly condemns new EU sanctions. Iran strongly condemns new EU sanctions against the country over the recent riots, vowing reciprocal bans against European persons and entities. Australia reverses the previous government's recognition of West Al-Quds as the so-called capital of Israel, saying the city's status cannot be decided through unilateral decisions. And Saudi Arabia has not invited US officials to an investment conference as tensions soar between the two sides over an OPEC Plus decision to cut oil output. Many thanks for joining us. Strong condemnation coming out of Iran bans on European officials and entities. The ministry spokesman says EU sanctions constitute a violation of international law and are a clear example of meddling in Iran's internal affairs. Nasser Kanani says the EU's decision shows its bias and that it's using human rights as a means to achieve political goals. He added that the EU and its member states had already acquired a reputation in Iran as a major violator of human rights due to their inaction and endorsement of harsh US sanctions on the country. Earlier, Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian also took to Twitter to dismiss the sanctions as futile and based on false allegations.
Down a well-worn path of ineffective sanctions, the EU today adopted further superfluous sanctions on Iranian persons. It's an unconstructive act out of miscalculation, based on widespread disinformation. Riots and vandalism are not tolerated anywhere. Iran is no exception.
Amir Abdollahian's tweet came hours after EU foreign ministers imposed sanctions on Iran. The sanctions list includes 11 individuals and 4 entities. The bans target a section of Iran's police charged with ensuring moral security, as well as the Basij Volunteer Forces and the cyber division of the country's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. The Iranian Minister of Communications and Information Technology is also blacklisted. Some European officials have criticized Iran for its response to the unrest that followed the death of a young woman last month. 22-year-old Mahsa Amini died in hospital days after collapsing at a police station in Iran. A forensic investigation dismissed allegations that she was beaten and attributed her death to an underlying condition. Head of London-based Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Shajareh, says there is a clear difference between rioting and protesting and that no government in the world can allow rioting during protests.
We need to separate the rioters from peaceful demonstration. Anyone in their right state of mind will understand the difference between these two and separate them. The reality is people do have legitimate right everywhere in the world. Indeed, in Iran, is part of the Iranian constitution. They have the right to demonstrate, but no one has got the right to commit riots and endanger people's life. I mean, we have seen footage of security forces in Iran being kept and then put a light, petrol put on them and put a light. No government, no authority could allow this sort of behavior to be unleashed in their society because they have the responsibility and indeed the duty to protect people and create security within the society. You know, I could give you over and over history of what is being done in Britain. I mean, for example, the riots in Bradford, the judge orders and said anyone who holds the stone, even if they don't throw it and they drop it on CCTV, should get 5 years imprisonment. Anyone holding a Molotov cocktail, and even if not throwing it and dropping it, should get 8 years imprisonment.
Australia has reversed its recognition of West Al-Quds as the capital of Israel, saying its embassy remains in Tel Aviv. The Australian Foreign Minister Penny Wong says the status of Al-Quds should be decided as part of talks between Israelis and Palestinians and not through unilateral decisions. The former Australian government formally recognized West Al-Quds as Israel's capital in 2018. That followed a similar move by the administration of the former US President Donald Trump and sparked a widespread domestic backlash. Israel annexed East Al-Quds after occupying it and the West Bank in 1967. This as Palestinians want East Al-Quds as the capital of a future state. The US is one of the only handful of countries with embassies in Al-Quds. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called on the United Nations to hold Israel accountable for its deadly aggression against the people in the occupied West Bank. Hamas also urged the UN to break Israeli siege on Palestinian cities and refugee camps. It called the regime's blockade a collective punishment for hundreds of thousands of defenseless Palestinians in a blatant violation of international law. The resistance group said the UN should assume responsibility to criminalize the Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories. The regime has intensified its deadly crackdown against Palestinians across the occupied territories over the past months. More than 120 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli attacks so far this year. U.S. officials have not been invited to a Saudi investment conference planned for later this month. That's according to the organizer of the event. The decision comes amid growing tensions between Washington and Riyadh over a decision by OPEC Plus to cut oil production by 2 million barrels a day from November. The conference, dubbed Future Investment Initiative FII, is set to begin on October 25th in Riyadh. The three-day event usually draws top Wall Street entrepreneurs and investors and high-ranking officials from around the world. The organizer says the move not to invite American officials this year is made to avoid the international conference becoming a political platform. Richard Atyas says he doesn't want the media attention to be diverted to the political agenda between Washington and Riyadh. The Chinese Communist Party, or CCP, holds its national conference twice in a decade. The party, which has ruled the country since 1949, kicked off a new summit on Sunday with a speech by President Xi Jinping. During his address, Xi lauded his government's zero-COVID policies and called for boosting the country's military. He also touched on issues such as China's stance toward Taiwan, as well as the country's economic policy.
Beijing's Great Hall of the People saw Xi Jinping, the Secretary General of the Chinese Communist Party, attempt to cement his power by setting out to clinch an unprecedented third five-year term as president. In his address to some 2,300 officials and delegates from across the country, he laid out his policies and lauded some of his government's achievements. Among those achievements, President Xi reiterated the validity of his harsh zero-COVID policies. Policies which, to this day, shut down major cities and operations in China sporadically and disrupt businesses in a world increasingly accepting of COVID-19 as a reality to live with. In fact, China's civil aviation predicts that by the end of next year, the country's air traffic, while double the current figures, will still be just 15% of what it used to be before COVID. The policy's toll on people's mental health, though, may have been the biggest cost of China's success in containing the virus. Repeated lockdowns has resulted in the Chinese youth developing gaming addictions, sleep abnormalities, and a reluctance to go outside. Of course, COVID wasn't the only thing President Xi discussed in his address. He called for accelerating the country's military development while China already spends the second largest military budget in the world after the US. The military plan aims to improve China's ballistic missile capabilities, develop various aircraft carriers, and establish overseas outposts. Xi can lay out such military development plans because he doesn't just hold the title of President of People's Republic of China or the title of Secretary General of the CCP. He is also chairman of the Central Military Commission.
Xi Jinping, who is also the commander-in-chief of the Chinese military, refused to rule out the use of force in his plan for Taiwan's reunification with China. He also condemned foreign interference in Taiwan, his self-ruled island Beijing claims as an inseparable part of its territory.
Taiwan's relations with China, as well as the U.S., have been clearly defined in the One China policy. It is the diplomatic acknowledgement by the U.S. that there is only one Chinese government and that the U.S. can have no formal ties with the island of Taiwan, but rather with the Chinese government. The policy has a long history dating as far back as 1949 after the end of the Chinese Civil War, but it was in 1979 when, under Jimmy Carter's presidency, the U.S. finally established formal diplomatic ties with Beijing and thus severed ties with Taiwan and closed its embassy in Taipei. But in that very same year, the U.S. also passed the Taiwan Relations Act, which meant that it would support the island's ability to defend itself by supplying it with arms. The U.S. has always maintained strong informal ties with Taiwan. The One China policy was undermined much further during Trump's presidency, and not just because of former president's inflammatory remarks about China.
And then we had the horrible plague come in from China. Boy, oh boy, what they cost the world.
It was because after decades, Tsai Ing-wen, president of Taiwan, spoke to a U.S. president, breaking diplomatic protocol. Sino-U.S. relations have only gone downhill from there. The biggest offense in the eyes of China happened when U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited the island in August in a move that infuriated China. Since then, Beijing's resolve to reunify with Taiwan has only gotten stronger. Xi Jinping has time and again rejected any form of separatism, as well as interference in the island's affairs, as it considers Taiwan a part of its territory. Xi's call for accelerated military development could hint at his impatience over U.S. meddling and his increasing resolve over following through with his reunification plans with Taiwan.
Moving on now, France is bracing for fresh disruptions amid a cost-of-living crisis as strikes are spilling over into new sectors. Trade unions have called a nationwide transport strike for high wages for Tuesday. Other industries and the public sector have also announced walkouts to protest soaring energy prices and hiking inflation. France is struggling to cope with the fuel shortage following weeks-long walkouts in oil depots and refineries. The industrial action has also spread to the nuclear giant EDF. Nationwide demonstrations against soaring prices are also planned for today. People are angry at the high cost of living, partly caused by the war in Ukraine. New British Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt has announced a fresh economic plan, dismantling the government's so-called mini-budget proposal unveiled just weeks ago. The new move is a complete reversal to nearly all of Prime Minister Liz Truss's tax cut proposals. It is aimed at restoring the government's economic credibility and calming financial markets after a tax-slashing plan sent markets into turmoil and caused uproar in Parliament. Hunt says he will reverse almost all the tax measures announced before. Also, the cap on energy prices charged to households would be guaranteed until next April. Earlier, Truss voiced support for Hunt's plan, saying it would chart a new course for growth. The UK is already grappling with high inflation and slow economic growth that have raised fears of a looming recession.
After weeks of economic and political turmoil, an early announcement by the UK's new finance minister aimed at calming the nerves at home and abroad.
Although the Prime Minister and I are both committed to cutting corporation tax, on Friday she listened to concerns about the mini-budget and confirmed we will not proceed with the cut to corporation tax announced.
And with that, Jeremy Hunt reversed most of an economic package announced by his predecessor, Kwasi Kwarteng, just weeks ago, including a planned cut to income tax.
It made no sense economically, it made no sense politically, and basically the markets couldn't make any sense of it either. So basically, you've ended up wasting a lot of time and energy reversing a stupid policy that was put in the first place. Simple as that.
But not everything is being reversed. The government is still going to end the cap on bankers' bonuses, meaning bankers will be able to take home more than double their fixed salary when the change is made. And then there's the cap on household energy bills, Liz Truss's most popular policy, that was supposed to be in place for 2 years. It'll now be reviewed in April next year. Much of the economic and political turbulence in the UK is blamed on the war in Ukraine and unpredictable global market forces. Many experts say there is another important culprit.
Ultimately, a lot of this nonsense and the idiocy of Boris Johnson, the idiocy of Liz Truss, actually, its roots are in Brexit. Because what has Brexit done to the British economy? It's basically knocked 4 to 5% off the GDP. That's led to a loss of tax revenues for the government. It's led to problems for business because they haven't got the supply of labour that they need. All right. And it's basically acted and a huge waste of money, of course, on customs officials and this and that and the bureaucracy for business.
Liz Truss's premiership has been nothing less than a roller coaster. Her decisions have given the opposition Labour Party a comfortable lead in opinion polls and badly damaged her credibility with her own party.
With the new Chancellor ripping up her economic plan, the Prime Minister now has to regain support of the MPs. But with the amount of plotting that's going on against her, whether or not she can do that is anyone's guess. Saeed Bourza, London.
Well, those were the top stories for this hour.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it. And leave no grief unless Thou takes it away. And leave no enemy. And leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names. In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is His anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is His good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from Thee, O Patron of Beneficence.
The Limelight.
The Zionist regime, in a blatant and barbaric move, has authorized its military to kill Palestinians with drones in the West Bank. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Throughout website wrote, commanders of the Israeli occupation forces, IOF, have been authorized to use armed drones to kill Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, with the approval of Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Aviv Kohavi. Hamas called the order a dangerous step and urged Palestinians to continue resisting the Israeli occupation with all means possible until they regain their legitimate rights. The authorization to expand the use of killer drones coincides with a significant rise in shooting attacks and massive gunfire during arrest raids, specifically in the northern West Bank cities of Jenin and Nablus, according to the Jerusalem Post. On September 28, the IOF killed 4 Palestinians and injured dozens more during protests in Jenin. Since as early as 2008, the Zionist regime Air Force has been killing Palestinians in Gaza with drones. They have also been used to fire gas bombs and live rounds in occupied Al-Quds. Although drones have been employed for surveillance, this is the first time armed drones will be utilized in the occupied West Bank. Drones comprise 80% of the total flights hour in the Zionist regime air force. But the Zionist regime has no right of self-defense against the people whose land it occupies. The Fourth Geneva Convention says that an occupying power has a legal duty to protect the occupied. As an occupying power, the fabricated regime of Israel cannot use military force against the occupied Palestinian people. Under international law, the Palestinians have a lawful right to resist the Zionist regime's occupation of their lands, including through armed struggle. In 1982, the UN General Assembly reaffirmed the legitimacy of the struggle of peoples for independence, territorial integrity, national unity, and liberation from colonial and former and foreign domination and foreign occupation by all available means, including armed struggle. In May, Palestinian-American journalist Shirin Abu Aqile, known as the Voice of Palestine, was reporting on an illegal IOF mass arrest raid on the Jenin refugee camp when she was assassinated by an Israeli regime sniper. The Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, ICC, classifies the targeting of war correspondents or journalists reporting from war zones or occupied territories by killing or physical assault as a war crime. Although the Zionist regime initially denied that an Israeli regime sniper shot Abu Aqile, it later said there was a high possibility that she was accidentally hit by IDF forces' gunfire. On September 20, Palestinian human rights organization Al-Haq and London-based research group Forensic Architecture issued a report finding that the Zionist regime forces repeatedly and deliberately targeted Abu Aqile with a well-aimed bullet. Her vest that said press was clearly visible to the IOF shooter, as shown by the detailed digital reconstruction from Al Jazeera footage. The same day that Al-Haq and Forensic Architecture released their report, the International Federation of Journalists, the International Center of Justice for Palestinians, and the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate filed a complaint in the ICC on behalf of Abu Aqile family and journalist Aliya Samoudi, who was also shot by IOF forces at the same time as Abu Aqile. Al-Haq is one of the 6 Palestinian human rights groups that the Zionist regime baselessly designated terrorist organizations and one of the 7 raided by the IOF in August. The Zionist regime's assassination of Abu Aghla occurred just days after a coalition of Palestinian journalist organizations and leading human rights lawyers filed an initial complaint in the ICC protesting the systematic targeting of Palestinian journalists. Jennifer Robinson, a lawyer for Abu Aghla family, said the killing of journalists is an attempt to cover up and prevent their work in documenting human rights abuse and fosters impunity for the injustices that they are seeking to cover. The Zionist regime's High Court of Justice effectively legalizes almost every act committed by the Zionist regime's security forces. Ishai Menochin, executive director of the Public Committee Against Torture in Israel, wrote in the book Drones and Targeted Killing, Legal, Moral and Geopolitical Issues. One can only conclude that Israel's HCJ is one of the primary enablers of the ongoing Israeli occupation of the occupied Palestinian territories. Another enabler of the Zionist regime's illegal occupation is the U.S. government, which provides the Zionist regime with $3.8 billion annually in military assistance. The Biden administration has refused to condemn the Zionist regime for its illegal terrorist designations and raids on the Palestinian human rights groups or its unlawful assassination of Abu Aghla. U.S. President Joe Biden has twice refused to meet with Abu Aghla's family face-to-face. Those who speak out against the Zionist regime's illegal occupation face serious consequences. Progressive journalist Katie Halper was censored and fired by The Hill for defending Representative Rashida Tlaib's description of the Zionist regime as an apartheid regime. Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem have all characterized the system in the Zionist regime as apartheid. The Hill is owned by Nexstar Media Group, which calls itself America's largest local television and media company. Journalists who report the truth about the Zionist regime's crimes incur the risk of being fired or even assassinated. Neither the Zionist regime nor the U.S. government and its corporate media will tolerate any criticism of the illegal Israeli occupation.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. The New York Times recently sacked a Palestinian photographer from Gaza because of his support for the resistance to the occupation. In this week's programme, we'll be looking at the forces behind that decision and the way in which the Zionist regime marshals its forces internationally to remove critics of the occupation from their jobs. I'll be speaking to experts on this issue to find out more after this report by Latifa Abu Chakra.
A Palestinian who spent 4 years working for the New York Times in Gaza has been dismissed by the newspaper following the intervention of an Israel lobby group. Hossam Salem said that he was informed via an abrupt phone call from the US outlet that they will no longer be working with him in the future. He even stated that the lobby group not only succeeded in terminating his contract with the New York Times, it has also actively discouraged other international news agencies from collaborating with me and my two colleagues. Of course, the New York Times had no problem employing Ethan Broner, Isabel Kirshner, and David Brooks to write about Palestine, while all three had children fighting in the Israeli military. But who was this lobby group behind this dismissal, and how close is it to the Israeli regime? The ironically named Honest Reporting was founded in 2006 by Joe Hyams, who was a registered bureau speaker for the Israeli embassy in the US. Another founder is Simon Ploska, who worked in the spokesman unit of the Israeli military, also for Israel lobby group BICOM. The CEO of Honest Reporting, until very recently, was Daniel Pomerantz, who before that was a civilian volunteer in the Israeli military. The current CEO, Jackie Alexander, worked for Israel lobby giant AIPAC for 15 years. The role of senior international connector in Honest Reporting is served by David Mensah, who led the Labour Friends of Israel in Britain for over a decade. He counts speech writing for Prime Ministers Boris Johnson, Tony Blair and Gordon Brown on his resume. Rakela Karamson works as digital media specialist at Honest Reporting. She previously was in the central command of the Israeli military during the Second Intifada. The lead designer at the pressure group is Bentzi Binder, who was in the Israeli military Givati Combat Infantry Brigade. The current senior editor of Honest Reporting, Gideon Ben-Tzvi, was also part of the Israeli military. The executive director of Honest Reporting, Gil Hoffman, says that he does not hide the fact that he served in the spokesperson's unit of the Israeli military. Palestine Declassified has obtained footage of him talking openly about his organization's relationship with the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Today I went to a meeting at the Foreign Ministry where there were organizations that work in the pro-Israel sphere that they hosted that are non-governmental organizations. And there were 60 of us there in the room. And the government was explaining what it's doing and how they want to work better with us. It was quite impressive. We've got WhatsApp groups now that are run by the government where we share information, working together.
So it's clear that Hossam Salem, a Palestinian photographer from Gaza, was fired from his job at the New York Times by the Israeli military.
As always, we're joined by our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and former professor at Bristol University and a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. He's also a co-founder and co-director of the lobbying watchdog initiative, Spinwatch. Our guest expert today is Andrie Nieuwhof. Andrie is a writer and human rights advocate based in the Netherlands. She's a former anti-apartheid activist at the Holland Committee on South Africa, and she writes an occasional blog for the Electronic Intifada. Welcome to the show. David, let me start with you. I mean, yet another example of someone being sacked over a social media statement critical of the Zionist entity. This is becoming an all too regular occurrence, isn't it?
Well, there's a pattern of behaviour, to coin a phrase, yes. There. They are doing this all over the world. Wherever there are people who are standing up for Palestinian rights, they are gone for and they target them. And this is, you know, as we can see from the film there, this is something which is coordinated by the Zionist regime itself. These are not autonomous Israel lobby groups. They're all instruments and assets of the Zionist regime. So we shouldn't be surprised. This is a worldwide phenomenon. We should see it as a connected thing because it is.
Yeah. I mean, Andrie, the lobby employee who wrote this hit piece used to work for the Dutch Zionist lobby group, the Center for Information and Documentation Israel. I mean, you've written about the CIDI. What impact does it have on democracy in the Netherlands? I mean, does it undermine it in any way, do you think?
Well, they try to stifle people who are critical of Israel's violence, violations of international law against Palestinians. The impact in the public sphere is not as large as it is, for example, in the UK or in the US, but they are present. And as you can see, this guy von Koningsfeld, he learned a bit the job while he was at CD. He was invited by Gilad Erdan of the Ministry of Strategic Affairs on several missions. So that's how he learned the job.
Yes. I mean, David, this connection between honest reporting and the Israeli military seems pretty extensive. I mean, how widespread is it in Zionist lobby groups?
Well, we've reported on this a number of times, you'll remember. I mean, it's a very, very widespread pattern in lobby groups, but also in startups and companies started by people who've come out of the military, sometimes out of the intelligence services of the Zionist regime. So it's just a very widespread pattern. And we see people who present as being policy analysts or PR advisors, but of course, you know, almost all of them will have had some kind of experience in what's called the IDF, the occupation forces of the Zionist regime. So it's essentially a network which is being formed with people with common experiences.
Yeah. I mean, Andre, can you tell us more about the activities of this guy, von Koningsfeld?
Yeah. When he was in the Netherlands, he was very active for CIDI, but he was so much younger. Now he's more sophisticated in a way, more brutal. But during the CIDI times, he tried to bully people. He wrote letters to universities to cancel a debate on the academic boycott. He, on Twitter, incited people to become active against people who spoke in favor of Palestinian rights. He was, as a young person, at 17, he said, I want to become the mayor of Utrecht, so he has quite, I say, an ego. And he converted to Judaism, and then he went to Israel, and he lives now there in an illegal settlement of, I say, Ili. I don't know if I pronounce it correctly. It's quite orthodox. And I would say, in the Netherlands, during his activism, he used the information of NG Monitor. And in a way, now he produces his own information at Honest Reporting, using the same tactic, guilty by association, checking people's social media, trying to find some what he considers evidence to smear people. And it's business as usual, like David says, it's tactics of people who support Israel at any cost.
Yes. I mean, David, what do you make of the New York Times employing three writers to cover Palestine who simultaneously have children in the Israeli military?
I mean, again, this is something we've seen a number of times in different programs, that it's not just that they've had experience of the occupation army and presumably of human rights abuses, but they are actually doing it at the same time as a job for which there's a clear conflict of interest. Mm. And I don't think that the mainstream media organizations have got any conception of what they're doing here. This is a party to a conflict. And people can't be journalists and party to a conflict at the same time. It's a fundamental contradiction.
No, indeed. Certainly wouldn't have thought so. It's a very strange state of affairs. I mean, Andre, I mean, we also understand that a member of the CIDI's staff actually stood for the Dutch parliament on the ticket of the far-right party for freedom, led by Geert Wilders. I mean, are there any other connections between the Israel lobby and the far-right in the Netherlands?
Yes. In fact, a few years ago, two, 3 years ago, two staff members of Fidi were a member of the Thierry Baudet's Forum for Democracy, which now for everybody it's clear it's an extremist right-wing party. And at the time we warned Fidi, you have those people in your staff, but you know, you are saying you are against Semitism, but look who you're working with. This party hates Muslims, and you're on the wrong track. So the links, but with the exposure of Thierry Baudet and his party, they try to cover up in a way and distance themselves from it. But the links with the PVV are still there. And there's a new party, a Farmers' Party. And they're also right-wing. And now you see they shift to this party, to using it as a tool to pose their questions, to influence parliament with motions. So the links, I say, are quite strong. And you never hear Zionist lobby group about the settlement, and you know, when they really follow the agenda of the Israeli propaganda, like when we had the sad event that a Palestinian homosexual was murdered, kidnapped from Israel, every pro-Israel activist says, oh, you see the Palestinians, but in fact they don't give a damn about the rights of Palestinians. They're in fact anti-Palestinian, anti-Muslim. That's the agenda, and at times it's quite sickening. Going back to the influence of Koningsfeld, the national broadcaster NOS appointed a correspondent for the Middle East, and her name is Nasra Abibala. So you can imagine what happened. No, honestly, for same treatment like the photographer, but the NOS stood their ground, and there was a whole campaign on Twitter to attack them.
Let's just pause there for a moment, Adi, if we may, because I just want to listen to this report on the role of the Zionist regime in running pro-Israel networks around the world.
We've got WhatsApp groups now that are run by the government, where we share information, working together.
These were the words of Gil Hoffman of Honest Reporting, revealing the close coordination between the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and nationally independent pro-Israel groups all over the world. But the strategic use of pro-Israel groups by the Zionist regime is not new. The Ministry of Strategic Affairs, or MSA, which had the lead role in the global war on the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement, created a network back in 2018. Here is the Jerusalem Post describing the network at an awards ceremony in 2019.
The Digital Network is a group of bloggers and social media experts established by Minister Ardan's Ministry of Strategic Affairs in March 2018. There are already 100 members from 20 countries around the world who together have a reach of about 15 million people in more than five languages. The network works 24/7 to defend Israel on the internet, to combat BDS, and attempts to boycott the world's only Jewish state.
At the awards ceremony, one can see Dutch lobby veteran Hidde van Koningsveld holding the Digital 19 placard. He was the author of the dossier which resulted in the sacking of the Gaza-based photographer Hossam Salim from the New York Times. He converted to Judaism and changed his name to Akiva, to Judaize it, and now lives on an illegal settlement in occupied Palestine. The network has members in India, South Africa, Brazil, and many other places. All the key lobby groups are involved, including CAMRA, Stand With Us, NGO Monitor, and Honest Reporting, for which van Koningsveld works. UK members include operatives from the Nasher Jew Troll account on Twitter, such as David Collier, as well as Simon Cobbs from Sussex Friends of Israel. One of the key tactics of the Zionist playbook is to lean in to accurate charges, as if to say, how ridiculous. They calculate that this is more effective than denying the truth. So the MSA producing publicity at their Digitel conference, proclaiming that they're undercover Hasbro trolls. They even produced a birthday cake with a blue-haired troll on it. Zionist asset Simon Cobbs of Sussex Friends of Israel leaned into that, appealing for money to be sent to his groups, without revealing, of course, that they were already in receipt of ministry largesse. Meanwhile, one of the UK's best-known non-Jewish Zionists, the former arms lobbyist Luke Akers, follows the same script. Here he is on the left with close Zionist collaborators posing in their distastefully unique t-shirts. It's no surprise that Akers is also a member of the network, having attended the first conference in 2018 on behalf of We Believe in Israel. When they tell you it's anti-Semitic to say they all work together, remember, that is a lie.
David, I mean, has Gil Hoffman let the cat out of the bag on the coordination via WhatsApp groups of apparently autonomous Zionist organisations, do you think?
Well, he has, hasn't he? I mean, this is a private Zoom meeting, but it was obviously cast on the internet. And he said, yes, these are WhatsApp groups we have. They're run by the government. We coordinate. We work together. And, of course, this is what this digital network is for. And they say it very clearly in the film there. This is a network. We all work together. And they use the same lines. And so, of course, they're going to be targeting Gazan photographers for the New York Times or MPs for the Labour Party in England or journalists in places and academics and others. So, of course, they're doing this in a way which is calculated and coordinated. And, of course, when you see the troll accounts in this country, for example, Nasher Jew and many others, this is a coordinated effort to target anyone who will stand up for the Palestinians. It's not something which they do because they're scared Jews in the UK or in the US. It's because they're there to work with, directly with, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs as it is now and the Ministry of Strategic Affairs as it was then in the Zionist entity itself. This is an overseas foreign policy strategy by the State of Israel. It's not any kind of autonomous argument against anti-Semitism.
No, indeed. Andrei, what about this guy Hidi? I mean, he was a guest of the Zionist regime in 2018 and 2019, I believe. Do you think people are aware of the network nature of the Zionist lobby?
The uneducated public, not but the activists, they are very much aware. There was a report published 2 years ago about the effort to limit the public space for about Palestinian rights, and it was very clear how the modus operandi was. NGO Monitor comes with information, it's taking up by CD, questions in parliament, pushing the minister to defund organizations like Al-Haq. I think it's very clear. Maybe not really the size of the network, but if you are really on a day-to-day basis busy with defending Palestinian rights, you know, I think it would be interesting if Dutch needs would pay more attention to international. Because that's what CD tries to hide. It's like Center for Information Documentation Israel sounds very neutral, but the agenda is really different. And what I find frightening is that the board member is now appointed as the national coordinator to combat Semitism. He was in charge when all the stifling activists, academics happened. And Hidde van Koningsfeld was the one who really pushed for it. So it doesn't sound good.
Yes. I mean, David, the digital conferences were about creating an international network that could be used to coordinate activities and messages. I mean, do you think it's working?
It's working at one level. I mean, this is what we've seen for the last, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years now. An attempt to coordinate attacks on supporters of Palestine and critics of the state of Israel. And they go after people. They dig up past things they might have said on social media. They distort the meaning of those things. And then they go to their employers and they try to get their performances cancelled or their jobs removed or their candidacy stopped. There are literally hundreds of these things happening. I mean, all across the world where they have people active. And you saw them bragging there about them being active in countries all over the world, in different languages, different huge numbers of organisations. And that's what they're all doing. They're all trying to make sure that they can target anyone who will stand up for Palestinian rights. So it's working at that level because many people, as you and I both know,
indeed,
have lost their positions.
Absolutely.
And that's happened in other countries too. But at another level, of course, they are panicking because they can see the writing on the wall. Even Israeli ministers have said this, that they might not be able to withstand the Palestinian resistance. Yes. And that, you know, as we speak, the Palestinian resistance is girding its loins for a major confrontation.
Indeed.
And this is something which we have been living with since last May, since a year ago last May, when the resistance in occupied Palestine beat the IDF and beat them back. We're facing the possibility, I've said this before, of a collapse of the Zionist entity.
Yes.
And it might happen much sooner than we think.
Yeah. I mean, Adri, we've also looked into other key Israel lobby groups in the Netherlands, like Christians for Israel International and the Israel Product Centre. I mean, what do you know about their operations?
Well, they are, of course, firmly rooted in the churches, and they are Zionist. They are linked. And the Christian product center was fined this year for their labeling the product from settlement as made in Israel. So there is a pushback in the Netherlands. But these groups, there's quite a lot of money. Some of their workers are living in Israel, or a past worker in Israel in a settlement, the same settlement as von Koningsfeld lived in. It's really tough to deal with them because their agenda is clear. The settlements for them, it's the same as Israel. They are firm believers. But their influence is limited to their own church. So that's on the positive side. And there you come with Hasidi. They are a token of hope, Hasidi, and that's the opportunism of the pro-Israel lobby. They grab whomever wants to support Israel, whether it's Orban or in the Netherlands, the Christian Zionists.
I mean, David, there were a number of UK participants in this network. I mean, does that mean they're likely to be working together and to be directed by the Zionist regime? Very briefly, we've only got about a minute left.
Well, yes, I mean they are working together. We know this. I mean, we know that Luke Akehurst, who is is in the Labour Party, he's on the National Executive Committee of the Labour Party, poses as being some kind of leftist. We know that these people are working together with the ones who are more obviously rightist, the trolls like the National Jew, for example. They do coordinate. Sussex Friends of Israel, they coordinate as well. There's a clear coordination. They get money, some of these organisations, when the Ministry of Strategic Affairs was in operation. They got money directly from the ministry through various pass-throughs. So, yes, we know there's a coordination. But of course, as soon as we say there's a coordination, they shout anti-Semitism as if it would be impossible for them to work together.
Yeah. Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there as we're right out of time. Thanks to Adri Newhoff and to, obviously, our resident expert, Professor David Miller. We will, of course, be back next week at the same time, so please tune in then. As I say, we'll be back next week with more news and analysis on Palestine Declassified. So until next time, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now. We'll be right back.
in the limelight.
The Chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz, plans to travel to China around 3rd of November in a delicate balancing act to discuss business interests. We have taken at some of the world media's look at this event. Please stay with us. According to Bloomberg News Agency, the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz will visit China in early November. If it proves to be true, his Tuesday remarks that decoupling with China would be the wrong path and that globalization has been a success story that enabled prosperity explicitly delivered what is the mainstream attitude of Germany. Ending globalization and decoupling from China to form a relatively closed political economic bloc dominated by the United States is the new geopolitical pattern Washington has been trying to promote.